So we're starting. Actually, we're starting a new chapter after doing, you know, Never Give Up, and after we did Aliyah, Yerida, Torech Aliyah, etc. Now we're starting a chapter called in this book called Ayin Tov, a good eye. And in Ayin Tov is something very, very deep in Judaism, because Ayin, if you learn Kabbalah says something that if you look at it only from a scientific lens, it's almost 99% incorrect. But Kabbalah is not trying to be scientific. Kabbalah says that your eye, not only does it take in the light in order to see, it actually projects outwards light from your iris, from your pupil, and then grabs the light in. Now, scientifically, that's not true, but the Zohar is not trying to be scientific. It's trying to be spiritual. And on a spiritual level, the light that you take in has a lot to choose, has a lot of choice on your perception, right? You're not going to see this, even though it's going to be red and out there and etc. in front of your face, which the light is definitely projecting inside, and you're definitely seeing that color or that exact thing, unless your eye decided to grab that attention. Then there's a concept calling this grab my attention. Did this grab my attention, or did my attention grab it, right? So on a spiritual, scientific level, Ayin Tov is an ayin that chooses to see the good in things, right? Now, one of the examples of a statement would be, you know, don't look at the half glass empty, look at the half glass full, which then there's my friend of mine used to always say on that sentence, forget about the half glass empty, half glass full. When's the last time you noticed the glass? Right? Meaning...
I was gonna say, forget about half empty, half full, just take it and drink it.
Right, so before even that, like, we're talking about seeing what's full in the glass. We're taking the glass for granted. Don't take the glass for granted. Forget about an empty glass is still a glass that's intact, right? So your ayin tov is an ayin that decides to see tov, as the Baal Shem Tov, well, it's also named Tov, who we have recently, through documents released by the great empire of USSR.
His name is Tov?
The Baal Shem Tov is actually documented in Mezhugosh. Yeah, it literally says Baal Shem Tov, right? A spiritual doctor. Spiritual healer. That's what it says, and that's why he's exempt from tax. It's written there that he's exempt from tax because he's a spiritual healer.
Does it have to do with the spiritual part or the healing part?
The healing part. Doctors are exempt from tax. Today, they're taxed because they take so much money, but it used to be that they work for free, so they're exempt from tax. So the idea is that the Baal Shem Tov said, how do you know what Tov is? How do you know? How can we categorize Tov? Every society is going to take in definition, the dictionary of Tov is going to be different. And the Baal Shem Tov said, we have a definition specifically. It's in Ashrei. David HaMelech said it. And what is it? Tov Hashem. Right? What is Tov? Godliness. Anything that's godliness is good.
What does it say?
Right? An Ashrei. Tov Hashem Lakol, Racham Vakol Masav. Right? Letter Tet. Right? So what is Tov Hashem? That's the definition by the Baal Shem Tov, the scientific definition. You'll open up the Baal Shem Tov's dictionary, and under the letter Tov, under the word Tov, you'll have a godly. Right? Anything that's godly is good. Right? So Ayin Tov is an Ayin that's seeing good. That's seeing good in the world. Right? And if you're taking things for granted, then you're not having an Ayin Tov. Right? What do we say about somebody who doesn't have an Ayin Tov? What do we call it? Anybody ever hear the phrase Tsar Ayin? Tsarut Ayin? A narrow eye. A narrow eye. An eye that is narrow is an eye that doesn't see the full picture. Person, the more broad the picture you see, the more you'll obviously see the good, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu is painting a beautiful picture. And if you have a narrow eye, it's because you can't see the bigger picture, right? But the more your eye is broad, right? The more your eye is rachav, is open, is broad, the more you'll see things in a broader picture. Now, we say this a lot of times, and even in English, we say seeing things in a broader lens. What does that mean, seeing things in a broader lens? You see something in a narrow lens, you don't see much, you don't get all the picture. Is that a broader lens, right? Or ayin tov, the opposite of tsarut ayin, right? Is a strong facet. And Rav Kook says here like this, כשמסתכלים באמת בצד הטוב של כל אחד ואחד, when you really look at the good side of every single person, מתאהב האדם על הבריות חיבה פנימית. When you're able to see the good of every person, right? So I might not agree with your political view or with what you stand for, but I see the good in it. I understand that you really, there's a good facet that we are trying to promote in the world, and I see the good in that. I might not agree with the execution. I might not agree with the categorization. I might not agree with the fundamental vantage point that you're looking at from your narrative, but I see the good in what you're doing. I see the good in you as a person. I see the good in you as a human being. How could I not but like the whole world, right? Because the whole world is trying to, let's say most of the people are trying to do good, right? And they might not be doing good, okay? But they're trying, so that's good, right? Then a lot of the people in the world, they're doing bad, but by the bad they're doing, they're actually helping the world realize that this is bad, right? They're actually making the bad even more bold, right? Which is one of the things that we say about the Russia. What do we say? Hata hakeh et shina. What's hakeh? Lakot is to make bold, right? It's not to bash in, right? That is the understanding, but the translation would be to make bold, right? What's right? To make it bold, to make bold what is coming out of his mouth. He's saying something. He's saying, well, I think we should kill all these kind of people. You're saying we should kill all these kind of people? Right, yes, that's what I'm saying. Okay, great. Then now I understand completely that is a bad thing, right? Meaning I'm going to take it and globalize it so I can see the contrast of it, right? The more I zoom out, the more I see that this is contrasting this, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, right? I mean, in a deep way, Europe wouldn't be so loving and accepting of all the refugees from Asia, if not for, you know, the Nazi regime who killed so many people and created a contrast of this is really, really bad. So now we should do the opposite. Now we should not do the opposite. We should find the middle ground, but forget they'll get there. They'll get there, except for Haig, but they'll get there. What is chanufa? Anybody know? Chanufa is like when you try to win somebody's favor, right? When you're kissing up to somebody. When you're trying to make it that somebody likes you. If I really genuinely like you as a person, I don't need to win over your affection, your gratitude, your love, because what I'm looking at is the inner part of you that maybe you're not even connected to. So I don't need you as Congress to like me, because you the part that I love about you, you might not even be connected to. You might be so much right now on the outside of like bashing me for everything I'm doing that on the external level, you don't like me, I don't like you, that's fine. On an internal level, I very much promote what you're doing. You're trying to keep checks and balances, which is part of your job, and therefore you don't like me, which is fine, right? But you're doing your job, right? That you know, every now and then, right, there's like a story about this and this, and you know, and you're like, okay, at least they're doing their job, right? That's their job, and they're not the way I would agree with the, you know, system, but the system is still in place, and it's working correctly. Ki ha'itanyenut batzad ha'tov shehu pogesh tamid mechasa mimeno be'emet et kol ha'tzadim ha'raim. See, every side, there are sides good, there are good sides, and there are bad sides. Nothing in this world is fully good, and nothing in this world is fully bad. We're all created as flawed. We're all created flawed in order to perfect ourselves, right? This is the perfect world for people who want to perfect themselves. It's not a good world at all for people who don't want to perfect themselves. They're just going to be suffering from everybody around them, failing and learning or not learning from their mistakes. But if you're here to grow, great. See, but at the end of the day, when I meet a person, I'm able to glorify the good in them, then I realize that the bad that they have is just part of the journey. Rabbi Nachman made a grand statement, and he said, my goal in this world is to convince you that you're a good person who sometimes does bad and not a bad person who sometimes does good. Right, which is what maybe the world is being trying to convince us in a way or not, that you're a bad person, sometimes does good, so why don't you just give up or give in? And I mean, and Hitler in Mein Kampf literally wrote that black on white, we are barbarians, we should act like barbarians, and this Jewish curse of trying to hold ourselves to a higher standard, which we're not, is just going to cripple society, right? I mean, now there's teaching it again and translating it and a different story about
the translating is
what? No, they're translating. There's a new printing now, translating it, a better translation of Mein Kampf to English, and now it's they're printing it.
What? Oh, not in English, necessarily, right?
No, there's a whatever. It was in the news. I'm not interested. I don't care. mainly. I don't care. If anybody wants it on PDF, I'm happy to send it to you. But back
you
to...
Have my comp on PDF?
Yeah, do you want it?
No, I was just wondering.
Are you surprised?
Got to know what you're quoting. Got to know your sources. Got to know the Russia, right? I mean, but at the end of the day, the idea of this is who we are. We're barbarians. We've evolved from animals. We're just another form of chimpanzee, and therefore... You should just embrace that, and then you'll be okay, and just do your best, but don't hold yourself to a higher standard, which is, you know, the Jewish curse of conscious, right? We're on a different trajectory, and the trajectory is that you're a good person, you do bad, fine, we all do bad, we all fail, we're not perfect, we're not supposed to be perfect, we don't think we're perfect, right? And therefore, you know, your mom might think you're perfect, but besides that, nobody thinks you're perfect. And that's okay. And that's okay. You're a human being. You're better. You're a human becoming, and you're becoming something better every day. And you have to work on that, right? But when you start seeing the good in everybody, then you start covering the bad. Now, covering the bad is not being in denial of the bad, right? When I say my wife is perfect, I don't mean that she's a perfect human being. She, just like me, just like everybody else, has many flaws. But she might be perfect for me. She is great where I am, where I suck. And in the one or two things that I'm good at, I might be better than her, right? So that is a perfect balance, checks and balances. At the end of the day, when I see the bad in somebody, the question is, do I see that as him? Or do I see that as part of society? Right? And there's a famous story that a chassid came to the Oiv Yisrael of Apt, came to the Apt Rebbe. And he said, Rebbe, you don't understand. Recently, I've had all these thoughts of idol worship and treif and this and this and this and this. I have all these thoughts in my head. What do I do? And the Alter Rebbe and the Oiv Yisrael, the Apt Rebbe said, oh, don't worry. Those are not your thoughts. They're the new friends that you started hanging out with. That's their thoughts. And they just spilled over into your head. Meaning if you're in a society where that's all that talks about, all that people think about, then that's what you're going to think about because we're environmentally oriented and that's part of, for the better or for the worse, but mainly for the better. And the question is, you know, what am I amplifying? The good or the bad, right? So there's a famous story that the Hasidim came to the Rabbi Elimelech of Lizhansk, the Noam Elimelech, the Lizhansk Rav, who was the prime Rebbe in the third generation of Hasidus. And he said to him, Rebbe, and Gemara says, you have to say thank you to God for the bad, like you say thank you to God for the good. Is that real? Can a human being really be expected to do that? To say thank you to God when he loses $1 million? The same way he would thank God when he makes $1 million? Is that really a genuine request from a human being? So Rabbi Elimelech said, it's a really good question. I'm not sure. But if you go ask my brother, Reb Zusha of Anapali, he will have an answer. So the Hasidim get in a wagon, they travel from Lizhansk to Anapali. And when they get to Lizhansk, they see a little tiny broken down house. And they see, you know, a little man with torn garments, not like Rabbi Elimelech, who looked like a king. And they say to him, Zusha, your brother sent us. We have a kashya, we have a question. He goes, okay, maybe Zusha could help, I don't know. He said, how can the Torah ask of a man to say thank you for the bad in the same way they say thank you for the good? Is it really logical to ask somebody to say thank you when you lose $1 million the same way you would say thank you when he makes $1 million? And Reb Zusha looks at him and said, my brother sent you to me for that question? He said, yeah. He goes, how could I ever answer that question? Nothing bad ever happened to me.
Yeah, okay. Pretty
that. Okay. Hey, what's the real answer? And did Reb Zusha not bad happen to him? Bad happened to him.
If you can interpret,
he didn't perceive it
from God, yeah,
in that regard, yeah. Right? Meaning, the cut that I have alongside my collarbone, is that bad or good? Right? Was the scalpel cutting my skin open with the medical marijuana that I've been asked to take before? The only time I ever did drugs, and that was because my mom forced me. Messed up world when your mom says, it's part of a study, you need to take drugs. And I'm saying, you know what? I'm just going to have to kabeda tavicha ve'timecha. You know, if God tells Moshe kach lecha samim and Moshe does it, and if your mom says it, then you know, is it really bad? That's a question, right? Probably one of the best things that ever happened to me, that surgery, which allows me to, you know, lift my hand like this, and beforehand I could probably barely, you know, and at the end of the day, That is based on your perception. So how you choose to, as the Zohar says, grasp with your eye things is going to have a huge effect on how you decide to see things. Or as the Gra said, not because I was quoting too much Chassidus till now, that we say in Shema, Lo taturu achrei levavchem v'achrei enechem. But the Gemara says clearly, Ha'ain ro'a, the eye sees, v'halev chomei, the heart desires, v'kleya ma'aseh gomrim, and then you sin. Right? It starts with the eye seeing, right? As Chava says, Vatar v'inei ha'etz tov l'ma'achal. And then she desires it, and then she sins. So why does it shouldn't say Lo tatur achrei levavchem v'achrei enechem? It should say Lo tatur achrei enechem v'achrei levavchem. So the Gra said, you know why it says first heart and then eyes? Because what the heart doesn't want, the eyes don't see. Ooh. Right? If you don't want it, you're not going to see it that way. If you want to see that way, right? There's a famous story that one of my Rebbeim once told me that he was standing in Meron. I don't think it was Lag BaOmer, but a girl walked up, you know, to go to Rashbi, to Meron, and she was wearing jeans, you know, ripped up jeans, whatever they're called today, and a tank top. And she was walking to Meron and to Rashbi, and some guy was standing there and he goes, like, disgusting. And this rabbi of mine, he pinned this guy up to the wall. This is an Iraqi guy, very big, strong guy. He pinned this guy up to the wall and he goes, Atashikta! He screamed at him. He says, a girl who dresses like that and still comes to Rashbi is holier than Sarah Imenu. He says, a person who is in that place in life and is searching for spirituality, do you know what that says about their character? If you can only see what they're wearing, close your eyes. Right? But if all you're able to see is the external perception, then maybe something's wrong with your eyesight. And not with the person in front of you. And Rav Kook says, when you look be'emet and see the good in everybody, all of a sudden the bad, not only do you not see it as the person, not only does it become the contrast that allows you to see the good, it also becomes irrelevant because you understand that it's part of the journey, part of the way, the trajectory that a person's headed. So says Rav Kook further, Kol echad ve'echad miYisrael, and Samech Gimel, migadol ve'ad katan. Every single one of Am Yisrael, from the greatest to the lowest, or Elohim chayim beyifat kodesh bo'er u'ma'ir. Every person in Am Yisrael, the highest to the lowest, the lowest Jew. Imagine lowest Jew you know. Okay, I know who you're thinking of, but imagine lowest Jew you know. The light of God, beyifat kodesh, in a beautiful splendor, is burning and illuminating from within him. Rav Nosson in Likutei Halachos gives the analogy of a yid who is quote unquote bad as a light bulb that has been covered with layers and layers and layers of dust. So when you see the light bulb from the outside, there's no illumination at all. That light seems to be off to you. But if you take one finger and brush against the light bulb and remove the dust, you'll see that this light bulb has been on forever. And what you thought this light bulb is off or doesn't work is just piles and piles of dust that literally with one blow can really get rid of it. So every yid, from the highest to the lowest, has a burning light of godliness in him. That is called neshama. Ner Hashem, nishmat Adam. What's God's candle? Soul of a person. Right? We are God's candle. We're here to illuminate the world, to bring light into the darkness. V'ha'aretz ata tov avo v'choshech al pnei tehom. V'yomer elokim yehi or. What is that? According to some ideas in Kabbalah, souls. God creating souls. So you, your body, your animalistic side, Adam, Chava, was created last. The soul, however, was created first. So if you're acting like your soul, then you are more you're more important and you come first. And that's your relationship to the rest of the world. But if you're acting like an animal, then you come last. And cats and fish and wasps were all created before you. And that's this parallel that we have. On one hand, we're the highest, we're the first, we're the most important. On the other hand, we're the last. Last thing to be created. Last thing to evolve in this world. Literally, we came after everything. Right? Ve'hasoter lo, ve'hasoter lo'o shel Yisrael, ki'ilu soter lo'o shel hashchina. The person who closes the lid on the light of a yid is a person who's closing the lid on God's presence in this world. Right? I have to say, you have nothing to add to this world. And me saying to God, right? God, you're limited. Right? There was a yid who came to the Baal Shem Tov and the Baal Shem Tov saw him in passing. And he said to him, oh, are we going to see you on the high holidays this year? And they said, no, I'm not coming anymore. The Baal Shem Tov said, why? And he said, I've sinned too much this year. And the Baal Shem Tov got very angry all of a sudden. It grew to the size of 20 feet. Looked down upon him and said to him, how dare you? How dare you say that you were able to sin in such a way that now all of a sudden God's not interested? Right? How dare you limit God's forgiveness to a place where all of a sudden you're too much of a sinner for God to say, you know what, I can forgive that. Right? God can forgive this, but this, that much? You know what? It's too much for God. And obviously, the Baal Shem Tov, who was so smiling, friendly, and loved every single person, for him to all of a sudden turn 180 degrees and be so upset, obviously made the Jew understand that he made a grave error to think that there are certain things that God can't forgive. And that's one of the core foundations in Emunah of us as Yidden, but there's nothing that is unforgivable. Nothing. I've met students here who told me that they literally learned in high school, or at least they understood, that karet, you can't do tshuva for things that are karet. No, that's 100% not true. In other religions, there are certain sins that are unforgivable. In Judaism, there's no such thing as anything that is unforgivable. And when the Navi comes to the Chizkiyahu HaMelech and says to him, you're done, you're over, he said to him, stop prophesizing, because Ben Amot, Kalei Nevuatcha. I know what you're saying is nonsense, because I received from my father, from King David, there's no such thing, no such thing that you can't do tshuva for. So to say that a certain yid is that light is not needed, is to say the light of God is not needed. To look at somebody and say he's too far gone, no such thing. If he's a yid, no such thing. Right? And again, if you expand your consciousness out, you can even say that about every creation, every part of creation. Right? But there's different volts, voltages, and different lights. Maile Shraga Betihara. But Rav Kook is saying like this, Shneemar Mekudash Adam Yil'a Kodesh. The holiness of man is the holiness of God. The Zohar explains that, I mean, today's world we would use the concept pixels. But in the Zohar, it uses the concept of tablets. Not the tablet that you might have in your room. But in order to make a big portrait of a king, sometimes they made a big picture, but sometimes they would make tablets, right? What we call psifas, right? Little tiny rocks, and make a big picture out of little different color rocks, mosaics, things. And in the Zohar's analogy, we are all little rocks in the mosaic, little pictures that all together show God's face. And if you have less pixels, any person knows this, you don't get such a clear image. The more pixels you have, the more clarity, and also the more you can zoom in and see things to a higher resolution. But when you don't have, then it's a very blurry picture. Or you have many, many empty spots where you just can't fit. You just have black dots in the mosaic. Rav Kook says, "Hadimeyon haro'e behofa'ato shat kol echad miYisrael ofa elokit." Meshuchlelet hu tolada shel hanitzot hanevui shunimtzar rak bishvil Yisrael. Being able to see every single person, every single Jew, as a revelation of godliness is a facet of prophecy. Why? What is prophecy? What does it mean to prophesize? We all have a very warped understanding of prophecy because what's written down in the Torah are very specific prophets, prophecies. But if you learn through the Navi and you learn through Chazal, you understand that there are many, 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 many prophecies that were not written down.
Dreaming, namely, right? Panim al panim.
There is Moshe Rabbeinu had a prophecy of panim al panim, but prophecies could have been every small little idea, but it wasn't written down because it only mattered at that moment. But what is a prophecy? It's able to be able to see within reality God. And when you're able to see God in reality, then you're able to be able to see the unfolding of reality. Because if all of the world has one goal, and that is to reveal God's godliness, probably a better, smarter way to say that, but if the whole world has one mission, and that's to reveal godliness in the world, right? That's how the Zohar understands. Histakla be'oraita ve'bara alma. What is histakla be'oraita ve'bara alma? We all understand that God looked into the Torah and created the world. Everybody, you know this famous Zohar?
Yeah.
God looked into the world. Histakla be'oraita ve'bara alma. God looked at the world and at the Torah and created the world. Right? Now, in Perek Bet of Bereishis, how does Perek Bet start? Elo todot ha'shamayim ve'aretz behi barayam. What's behi barayam?
In their creation.
As they were created. I mean, God created the world. God created the world, or the world evolved on its own. So one of the understandings, a beautiful understanding, is God showed the world what he wants it to look like at the end. And then the world, go, evolve into it. The whole world is evolving into one beautiful image of mimicking the Creator in the creation. If you understand that that's the goal of the world, then you can tap into prophecy. You can tap into understanding where the world is headed, because the world is only headed in one direction. There's only one trajectory in the world, from beginning to the end. That's what Judaism has been saying for thousands of years. The world started at A and is heading to B. And what, till 50 years ago, what did every leading scientist and theologist?
No
beginning, no end, forever. Now they're saying no beginning, and we don't know if there's going to be an end. The end is going to die, and you're like, we're going to just...
Saying,
there's going to be an end, right? There is a beginning.
There's the same beginning.
Right, there's a beginning. But the end is like the sun's going to burn out, or this, we're just going to extinct ourselves, or a million different bad ideas. But the idea is that we're saying that the world is always on a trajectory from A to B. If you understand where the world started from, which only we've been doing for the past 5,000, whatever, 4,000 years, the world, only the past 50 years have been doing that, and you know where the world is headed, which is Ratzon Hashem, you can see where it's going, right? A lot of times, you know, that's why I hate watching the NBA highlights, because they're always favoriting the team that already won the game. So if you just start watching the highlights, you can already know who won. And it's annoying, because I specifically didn't want to know who won. I wanted to see the highlights, being open to the fact that each team can win, but you're always favoriting the team that won, right? So if you know how it starts, you can already, you know where it's going, right? Like in soccer, it could end with a tie. That's why everybody hates soccer. What a horrible sport. I'm just kidding. There's a depth in that. There's a depth in that, and I want to talk about it. Talk about it when the Mundial and the FIFA can have a hold of our Torah on soccer, and why it's the most watched sport in the world, and why it's the biggest industry, and etc. But if you know that one team's going to win, and you see how the game starts, and you know what their clip they're showing you, you don't have to be a prophet to know that your team lost, because they're not showing any of the good plays from your team. Right? That is a facet of prophecy. And Rav Kook says, when you're able to see the godliness in every single person and see the light of Kadosh Baruch Hu that he's illuminating by seeing the good that he creates, right? And his good might be that all his good might be that he's a contrast, right? Not to say that, you know, one president contrasted the other president very, very well, and hopefully the next president will be neither, and just... But Chas v'Shalom, I don't want to get political, because this is a safe space only for people who are safe in it. But the idea is that some people might only be good in contrasting. Somebody asked me yesterday, what do you think about the president of the United States? I said, he's doing a very good job in contrasting the previous president, and not only the way he looks and everything he does, right? Now, I didn't say anything. I'm not, nothing to say except for that. He's doing a if his job is to contrast that, then he's doing a fantastic job. I don't know what his job is, but if we'll only know what his job is later on when we get the next guy and figure out progression, regression, synthesis, right?
Rav could be the next woman.
Well, hopefully not, because Nikki Haley said that she's not running, so and she's the only one I would vote for. So.
Look at
Amy Klobuchar. Roseanne.
Well, we
so, yes, exactly.
Sorry.
Yes. So, Rav Kook says like this: Adam nishchat ra'uy lisnoto rak mitzad chetrono. A person who is a bad person, is doing bad. What does it say? What do we say in davening? What does it say in Tehillim? Ohavei Hashem.
Sinura.
The people who love God hate?
Bad.
No. Right, sorry. Yeah. Hate bad. We don't hate bad people. Right? We don't hate bad people. We hate the bad that they do. Right? When they didn't know how to read the pasuk, Yitamu Chata'im min ha'aretz u'resha'im odeinam, Rabbi Meir thought to read it, Yitamu Chotim min ha'aretz. All the sinners should be gone. Because that can be, you can punctuate it that way with the vowels. And Bruria said, no, Meir, what you call probably, Meryl, right? Even though his name was Rabbi Nehorai, so she probably called him Nehori. But she said, no, of course not. Because the end of the pasuk says, u'resha'im odeinam. Right? So it has to be Yitamu Chotim. Yitamu Chata'im. All the sins should be gone. And then there would be no more wicked people. So if you're saying all the sinners would be gone, then the continuation of the pasuk makes no sense. They're already gone.
No, I'm saying if you got rid of
You just say yitamu chatayim yitamu chotim in aretz. You have to say rishayim odeinam. Of course, that's sinah. It's obvious. But yitamu chatayim in aretz. If all the wickedness is gone, right? When we daven, one second. When we daven, Allah said that all about alamashinim, alaminim, alamashinim. I know there's a couple of groups in Am Yisrael that don't say that bracha in Shmoneh Esrei. I met some of them over the summer, but that's because they just disagree with their translation. Whatever they translate in their siddur, they should definitely not say that, right? And so you go over with them the Hebrew, then they understand that they actually agree with everything it says, right? It says laminim lamashinim al titikva kol arisha kergatavin, all the wickedness, right? Kol arisha katav kol vechamerka, right? All the wickedness should be gone, not the wicked people. Take care, uproot. Right, uproot. Tishaber. What is that? Right, tishaber. What? What does that mean? Right.
Tachnia.
Right, tachnia. What does tachnia mean? Subdue. No.
Subdue. Yeah.
Right. Take all that, uproot it, and then subjugate it to
and
you.
Uproot it, break
right?
it up, and then
right?
subdue it.
Right. And, right. So what? So what's the next bracha? Al tzadikim. So we can all have their right. What's that? So we don't want. We don't believe that there's such a thing as a bad person. We believe there are bad actions. Now, a person, Rav Kook says, Hadam.
Isn't tachalim to the consume?
What?
Wouldn't
Tachli'aim.
Oh, sorry,
Tachli'aim is confine them. Confine them until they're ready to change. But the idea is, and again, Rabbi Nachman says, even a person who's completely, completely, completely wicked, he wasn't created completely wicked. There's such thing. We believe that every person is created good. And then he went bad. So then you have to backtrack to where he went bad and then change his ways. Right? Yeah.
I think also it's important, like the first pasuk that you mentioned, Ovei Hashem Shinu Ra, it's important to recognize that Ra is not just, it's not just we hate the Ra of the people who we consider Rishayim, it's also the Ra of ourselves.
Right, that's we hate Ra in general, of course. Right, so Rav Kook says, Adam Nishchat, a person who's totally corrupt, Ra'u Lisnoto Rak Mitzat Chesrono, if you hate him, it's only because of the lacking that he possesses, or what he symbolizes. But the image of God that he has, right? You should love the image of God in him and say, this is not how a person should act. You are not being you, right? You are not being you. Right? Who showed me? Somebody showed me a meme of a little kid, a little Christian kid, standing like this with his hands, and he says, Dear Lord, please help close all those women on Dad's phone. Right? Right? All the women on Dad's phone that don't have clothes, right? You have to daven for them. He's davening. All these women don't have clothes on Dad's phone, right? But the idea is that you know all the bad that you only hate it because this. I know this is not who you're supposed to be. But if we're all barbarians and you're a savage, you should act like savages. Then how would I ask any more of you, right? All you're doing is your natural inclination. But if I believe that you are, you know, half man, half God. And the half God should prevail, then I believe in that. And I just know that this is not you. I know this is not you. And when a kid, when your child does something bad, that is the right reaction. When your kid, you find out your kid's stealing, to say, oh, yeah? Yeah? Suits you. I always knew it, right? I am not surprised. No, that is not the right answer. When your kid, you find out your kid's stealing, say, can't be. That's not you. It's not you. My little Avremel. Can't be. You're such a good boy. I know you. I know you from the day you're a good child. Okay? Temptation? The temptation exists. I'm tempted too also. But we have to overcome. I know that's not you, right? A father's job is to amplify the good in the child and not say, oh, I know, right? The famous story that Reb Shlomo once...
That's a crazy good parent anyways.
You're welcome. Reb Shlomo once went to Reb Shlomo, people don't know this, but Reb Shlomo used to go do free tours, free concerts in prisons in Israel and in America. Reb Shlomo used to go to prisons and... I think in one recording he says at least four times a year he would go and give a concert in prison. Right? There are not many people that can say that. And he once went to a max secure prison. And obviously he had to sign all these waivers that if they kill him or, you know, it's not his fault, and etc. All these things that he had to sign in order to go. But he went to this max secure prison, and he was there actually three times in his life, and he would give a concert for an hour, and the warden, he was crying. He said, you don't understand, these people are holding hands and dancing? These guys, the only time they touch each other is when they're beating the crap out of each other. And you're giving this concert, and you see all these inmates, and they're there for life. They have like seven sentences, you can imagine. And he said to Reb Shlomo, one of the times that Reb Shlomo was there, he said, how could I ever repay you? Like, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen in my years as a warden. He goes, oh, I actually know how you can repay me. And the warden's like, oh, this is really awkward. I don't have any budget for you. He goes, I want to go give a hug to every single inmate. And the guy's like, okay, we're going to have to sign a new waiver, okay? Because that is, these people here, they're murderers. Like, these people here are like convicted serial killers. And Reb Shlomo went and gave a hug to every single person. And this guy that was in there, and he is like this huge guy, and he was then there for like, you name it, yeah, everything. Yeah, a cocktail of everything you can imagine. And Reb Shlomo gave him this big bear hug. And as Reb Shlomo was leaving, this guy ran at Reb Shlomo, and all the guards were like, you know, ready to like react. And he says to him, he goes, you think I could have another one? Reb Shlomo turned around and gave him this big hug. He said, of course. And the person looked at Reb Shlomo and said, if I would have gotten a hug like this as a kid, I would not be here. And so much of how we react to things will affect our lives. If we make a person feel that he does bad and he's a bad person, then that's what's expected of him. The ultimate tshuva in Judaism is admitting that's what I did and denying that that's who I am. Yes, I stole. I'm not a thief. And as a parent, that's your job also. I'm not lying to myself that my kid didn't steal. Okay, my kid is a human being and he saw money, he was tempted, he took it. Okay, but I know that's not who you are. I know that's not who you are. And Rav Kook says, I should love him. The spark of God in him never gets tinted. The ratio of who you really are versus what you did. If I think that I was born 30 years ago and 364 days ago and 12 minutes ago, then...
Wait, is your birthday tomorrow?
Tonight. It's Shkia.
Wow. Good.
The big 3-1.
Wow, mazel tov.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so exciting.
Yes. Yeah. I took about my big stuff for 40. Big scare.
What was that?
Kafbet. Right. So if I think that that's all I did and for the rest of my whole life, right? Sometimes I speak to people and I go, Rav, I've been like this my whole life. I said, really? Because you've been around for 5,778 years and it seems like you've been doing this for what, 10? I mean, in ratio, that doesn't seem like a lot. It seems like a speck. Huh? Let me just open up the soul of you. And for 10 years, that's like what I'm trying to find in it. Not good at math. You know, in ratio, somebody could tell me it's probably like point something percent. Right? If you perceive yourself as I've deemed it my whole life. That's the wrong perception, but Vadai is somebody else, right? Even the most wicked person in the world beforehand has been something else, right? The Alter Rebbe, who was one of the greatest Kabbalists and one of my spiritual leaders, he did a special Kabbalah ritual that allows you to retrieve all your previous lifetimes. Okay? It's not a lot of people have ever done this. It's also not recommended. But when he finished this ritual, it was a long ritual, he all of a sudden had many scars on his body that were ancient. And he had scars all over his arms that looked like whips. And they were not there a day ago. And someone asked him, Rebbe, what are these? And he goes, as a sheep in Yaakov's flock, I'd always walk off. And Yaakov did not have any patience for nonsense. He would whip me. He said he also remembered when he was a Kohen Gadol in the Beis HaMikdash. And he would, instead of saying, in the tefillah, we say, V'kach haya moneh, and this is how the Kohen would say, he would say, Kach hayiti moneh. But then, also, everybody didn't know that on Yom Kippur, he didn't stop crying for 25 hours. He just bawled for 25 hours, that almost he dehydrated from crying. And people said, why are you crying so much? And he goes, well, I only told you those stories. I haven't told you other stuff that I've done. Right? But if you open up your consciousness of who you are for all of your life, then that little speck, and that's how you should view other people also.
Which rabbi was that, Rabbi?
The Oiv Yisrael of Apt. Rabbi Avram Yehoshua Heschel of Apt. That Rabbi Avram Yehoshua Heschel is named after. Rabbi Avram Yehoshua Heschel is a direct descendant of the Apt Rebbe.
Oh, wow.
He's named after, yes. The Apt Rebbe, the Oiv Yisrael, he's known to be the Oiv Yisrael because he loved the Am Yisrael in a way that I couldn't imagine. If you can look at your life in the broader speck of everything, then the sins are not that bad, right? Somebody once said to me, I remember I had a friend who lost his faith in the Medina after the disengagement in Gush Katif, and he became an anti-Zionist. And he said to me, this is proof that everything is wrong. So I said to him, Habibi, I respect you, but I want to tell you that as countries go, 60 years is an infant, okay? Countries, if you learn history, in their first 100 years, have done things that are far worse than anything Israel's ever done in all its existence. Right? Countries, America, in its first 100 years. What?
There's a whole Tamani baby scandal also.
Oh, that was horrible.
Dude,
but let's learn the first 100 years of America. Or the first 100 years of the French Revolution.
Why are we comparing ourselves to other sectors?
We're not comparing. But there's a reason that when a person grows, he makes mistakes. And when my kid is 2 and she poops on the floor, then I react differently. When then she's 4 and she poops on the floor, and when she's 16, probably take her to the hospital, right? Check something. Maybe something's wrong. Right, so there's a difference in growth. So the same way a person
is adults control the country all the time. So it's not really...
adults are babies more than babies. Babies complain all the time. Adults complain all the time. College students complain more than my children. Children. The idea is is that if you look at something in a broader spec, your soul is so much better than anything you're seeing. So even if I see somebody who's a villain, he's really doing bad, that might be in this lifetime around, in this character that he's been giving a part to play. But if you meet the actual actor, the actor is a great guy, right? There's a famous meme that went around about all the Avengers off scene. They went to eat some falafel, some shawarma.
Yeah.
All the Avengers were sitting, all the enemies, the good, the bad, all the bad people, they're all just sitting having falafel, right? I mean, it's a good thing that we have some Middle Eastern food that can bring all the peace together. But at the end of the day, right, only on set are we enemies. Only on set are you bad. Chas v'shalom, I'm going to say that you're bad, right? And that's kind of what happened to, I don't know if you guys know, but the guy who played Teabag in Prison Break. He would walk down the street, people would move to the other side of the sidewalk. Because he played the part so well in Prison Break that people that saw him in real life just assumed that he's a bad person. You assume a character too much. It happens. Even if a person's bad, I mean, he's a bad person, right? There's a whole story, there's a whole song that Naomi Shemer's son wrote about a guy who falls in love with this movie character, this movie star. And he sells all his positions and he buys a ticket to America and he travels to Los Angeles and he knocks on her door and she's married with kids. And he's so taken aback. What? She was a damsel in distress. She was a... No, that was on the movie. In real life, she's not that. So, Rav Kook says that your soul, the good of your soul, is 100 times more you than the bad of your nefesh. Right? If we're talking about currency, the good that you do is a million times more you than the bad that you do. Right? So on a currency level, this is one and this is one, but this is one Bitcoin and this is one yen. Right? So they're both one, but they're different value. What is the real you? Right? So when you do good, that is the real you. And when you don't do good, well, that is bad. You should hate it, because that's not you. Because that's not you. Right? How bad would it be? I mean, I got once thrown out of school because my mom went to Ukraine and she brought back some grivna, and I went and I took all the money and
it's grivna.
Grivna is the currency in Ukraine, and it's worth like 28 grivna is like a buck. And I went around school and I bought school supplies with hundreds and hundreds of grivna, which are like pennies and pennies and pennies. And then I opened a second-hand school supply store and sold it for shekels and made a lot of money. But school was very, very upset, A, because of the selling, but B, because, you know, I was saying, oh, I'll give you five. I'll give you 200 grivna for your pens. Right? 200. I just didn't know that it was like 200 cents, right? Inflation is so bad, right? So a person thinks, I have 10,000 averas. You know, 2,000 averas is like one mitzvah. Like, what are you bragging about? Right? You know, a person walks into Wall Street. I have, anybody ever see The Big Short? I have $1 million. I can't trade here the $1 million. I'm really, really sorry. You can go down the street and there's a company that will take your $1 million and they'll invest it for you. But you, $1 million doesn't help. You can't even get through the door, right? And $1 million, right? You think a person's bragging. It depends what school you're in, right? What work you're in, right? You know, you walk up to Bill Gates and say, like, I have $1 million. He goes, achoo, me too, right? I just sneezed and made it, right? I made by sneezing. I made it to, I don't know how much he makes now by every second he sneezes, but whatever it is, you know.
Tens of thousands.
Right. I mean, I grew up, Bill Gates was like the most richest person. Now he's like barely anywhere. I mean, I'm just kidding. He's still...
If you include... If you
blah, blah, blah. Shlomo, it was not really a conversation that I was going to start. It was a comment that I made alongside. But the idea is that the real you is the mitzvos and good that you do. And that is real currency. That is real money. That is solid gold. And the averas you do, yeah, there might be 100, might be 1,000. But they're yen. They're unhelpful. Now, yes, that doesn't mean you should brush them aside. But specifically when you're looking at other people, you should understand that the good that they have is so much more them than the bad. And that's why in Judaism, there's no such thing as any person who went too bad. That's why in Judaism, there are no prisons. What are the prisons? The only thing remotely close we have to prisons is Ir Miklat. Go live with all the holy spiritual people and you'll be influenced by them. Because it's just environment at the end of the day. And if you're going to be around holy spiritual people, that will bring out in you the holy spiritual side. And if you live in Ir Miklat long enough, you will become a holy spiritual person like the Levites. But to lock all the bad people up and say, you're all bad, and go hang out with all the bad people, well, you know, that's why 78 or 79% of inmates find themselves back in prison within a year. Because that's what you're being told. In Judaism, we have a whole different message. Shabbat shalom.